One, two, three, this is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker, and every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature, how to improve your life and your finances, career, love, health, and happiness. And every week we have an interesting show that talks about these different things, and we also have some great guests. And today I'm very pleased to have a very interesting guest, Mr. Steve Kaplan, who is the industry's most sought-after expert on comedy. He's taught at UCLA, NYU, Yale, and other top universities. He's created the HBO Workplace, the HBO New Writers Program, and he's a co-founder of the Manhattan Punchline Theater. He's mentored successful comedy writers. Peter Tolan, Analyze This. David Crane from Friends. Producers Tracy Proust from Will and Grace. He's taught his comedy intensive workshops to thousands of students around the world, bringing laughter and comedy training to many, many students. He's the author of The Comic Hero's Journey, his latest book, and also The Hidden Tools of Comedy. In addition to that, he lives with his beautiful wife, and he has three cats. Welcome, Steve, to the show.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, are your cats pretty funny as well, or are they serious kind of creatures?
My cats are the people who teach me the most about comedy.
Really? And why is that?
Because, you know, they do what they want to do without shame or apology. And that's either a good mark of a comedian or a psychopath.
So cool.
And they're not psychopaths, so they...
Okay. Now, Steve, you have an interesting book here, and it has two different titles that are interesting. You say The Hidden Tools of Comedy. Now, first of all, are comedy tools hidden? And number two, the serious business of being funny, is being funny serious? Can you tell me about those two things?
Okay, well, we call it The Hidden Tools because if you go to universities, conservatories, what most people learn in drama school or in artistic conservatories are they teach you how to play Shakespeare. Yes. They teach you how to speak with beautiful pear-shaped tones, and they teach you the basics of drama, either as an actor or director, as a playwright. So you can learn all those things, but there are very few places. There are a couple of universities that are starting to teach this, but there are very few places where you can learn comedy. Most places simply tell you, well, just be funny, or you have to be born funny. And so these, or else there are the myths, like the rule of three, if you listen to an old-fashioned sitcom, you'll hear a joke set up with normal reference, funny reference. Or the myth that jokes have to have a k sound, a hard plosive sound in it, like Cucamonga, which was Fields.
You take kind of a philosophical, almost a psychological and cerebral approach here. It looks like you define comedy as telling the truth about what it's like to be human, and also an ordinary person struggling against insurmountable odds without the tools, but not giving up hope. That sounds almost like a philosophical maxim. How do you see comedy as being that way?
Well, we start off with that philosophy. We start off with the philosophy that comedy isn't some foolish thing doing something clown-like and exaggerating. I think that's the misperception of what comedy is. You know, drama is what it means to be human, and comedy is just being silly and exaggerated. And I actually think it's the opposite. I actually think that drama is the lie. It's a beautiful lie.
Yes.
Drama helps us dream about what we could be. Would that we were as brave and resourceful as James Bond or MacGyver. Yeah. Would that we were as soulful as Hamlet. It would be great if we were as handsome or as beautiful as all the people on soap operas. But we're not. Most of us, some of us are, but most of us are not. So drama helps us dream about what we can be, but comedy helps us live with who we are.
I like that. Yeah, you talk about the hero who has greatness within, and then the comic non-hero who struggles against life and basically has flaws within. So on that category, you know, we come from a Spanish background. Do you know the tale of Don Quixote? Would you say he is
one of the great comic stories of literature?
Yes. So he's a non-hero, but he thinks he's a hero. Does he ever realize he's not a hero at some point?
Well, the real comic character in Don Quixote is Sancho Panza.
Ah.
Because Sancho is a normal guy who's kind of stuck with this crazy person, and Sancho is the person who tries to make sense of the absurdity of his friend in the world.
Yes.
So Sancho is us.
I see.
So in many comic duos, you'll have a crazy person or an idiot.
Yes.
Like in Mork and Mindy, Robin Williams playing Mork was this creature of great extremes. But then you have Mindy, who's just a normal person trying to make sense of the craziness. And that's, again, philosophically, that's who we are in the universe. We're just normal people without all the skills. That's what a non-hero is. A non-hero is simply somebody who lacks some, if not all, the skills required to win.
That's really fascinating, Steve. As a psychologist, I see that you have a lot of psychological elements here. I think it can be a benefit to the average person. For example, the idea of optimism. And we talk a lot about optimism on the show, to expect the best in the world. And it seems like these non-heroes have optimism in a certain sense. Is that the case?
Well, some of them do. I mean, Lisa Kudrow, who played Phoebe on Friends, used to call her character... that her character had unearned optimism. So when you have a character who kind of sees the world through rose-colored glasses, like Phoebe or like Kramer, you have one example. You know, Tigger in Winnie the Pooh, they're optimists. And then you have the pessimists, like George in Seinfeld, or like Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. We're somewhere in between there. And we can see the optimist and the pessimist as kind of archetypes. And an archetype is simply a segment of a universal personality. So there are times in which we're optimists. There are times in which we're pessimists. But what's true about comedy is that comedy is the art of hope. Because if you have a situation that is tragic, now you're writing drama. So how do you make a situation... a tragic situation comic, put something human in there, something that is optimistic and for all of us.
I see. Another aspect, on a personal level, they say that the ability to recognize your flaw and accept it can be a positive thing. You know, in other words, laughing at your flaw. Now, in the comedic area, does this happen? Because I think my producer was talking about someone like Frasier, who's kind of pompous, or I think you said Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, who's kind of arrogant. Do these people eventually realize that they have a flaw and they accept it, or do they still have rose-colored glasses about themselves?
Well, what you're talking about is you're talking about a character arc, which happens in a film or a novel, and it also happens... in sitcoms, even though most people think of sitcom characters as unchanging. But you can have a drama without a hint of humor in it, but you can't have a comedy without any seriousness in it. And the moment which a silly character becomes reflective, that becomes a dramatic moment. So if you think of every great comedy has within it both hilarious moments and moments of great sadness and great pain. Because, again, that's our lives. And so I think that characters do become aware of themselves in their more reflective, dramatic moments, and then they act more out of their own character in the comic moments.
I see. Because I'm trying to see how this would apply to a person that's listening to our show. Maybe they have a lot of bills. Maybe they don't have the right relationship. They have problems. And they see the comedic person, and you know, it could be maybe a hapless nerd trying to win a girl. And he said that the comedy gives him permission to win, that they can go as far as they need to go. He kisses the girl, punches his rival in the nose.
Right.
How do we take lessons from that on an everyday level? Can we identify with these comic characters and improve our own lives?
Well, I think you can identify with the fact that, you know, that nothing bad ever happens. Right? I mean, nothing except that one time in your life, something bad's going to happen that you won't recover from.
You're talking about in the real world or in the comedy?
In the real world. I mean, think about your life. You get sick and you recover, so it'll be okay. But what happens if you get sick and you don't recover? Then you won't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, if you die, that's the worst thing, I guess, right?
So but then all your problems are over. So the philosophy of comedy is that you'll live. The gesture of the comedian is a shrug. You'll live. I mean. everything that happens to you is going to be okay until it's not, and then you won't have to worry about it anymore.
Interesting.
So I think for a person who's struggling under bills, you just have to realize it'll be okay.
Wow.
You know, in my own personal life,
yes,
I've always found that the things that I thought were going to be the worst thing that ever happened to me always turned out to be the best, or at least okay. I had a theater company when I was younger in New York, and it went under. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't pay the bills. We had a close up shop, and I thought, man, this is the worst. But you know, out of that came this lecturing career, this writing career. I've traveled around the world. So I bought a house. I've had I've lost the house, and then I moved to a better house.
I see.
So it'll all be, you know, so the philosophy is for the people listening out there,
right,
is that, you know, life is a great adventure.
Right.
And comedy helps you gives you the perspective to be able to take on anything and still have a happy heart.
Yeah, I really like that, because I work a lot with trauma victims, and a lot of research shows that humor can really make a big difference in perspective and moving beyond the tragedy and the trauma.
Right.
And so, the bombings during Nazi Germany, a lot of the English people that had a sense of humor had less PTSD symptoms. So it really can make a big difference. And I like the idea of it's okay, that, you know, things will work out. That is an optimistic approach to life.
Yeah.
If
they don't, then you don't have anything to worry about after.
Exactly. The other thing, Steve, on a personal note, you know, I'm actually a shy person. I wrote a book called The Gift of Shyness. And one of the things that really helped me a lot was I studied improvisational acting. And that technique's got me out of my, what I call self-observer, the self-conscious side of our personality that judges and criticizes ourselves, and more into the actor. The actor is a spontaneous part of us that, you know, is really who we are inside, that is able to say things naturally and be more confident. And working with shy people, we often see that. And actually, I want to introduce my producer here, Reggie. Reggie, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Now, Reggie is a shy young man, 25 years old, never really been on a relationship, but he has a great sense of humor. How can he use humor to improve his dating prospects?
Well, if you believe in rom-coms and sitcom comedy, what they tell you is that no matter what you look like as a guy, you're going to get a gorgeous girl. That might not happen.
The 40-year-old virgin really works, is what you're saying.
Well, what really works is that if you have a great sense of humor, you're going to attract people who appreciate that, and you might not get the prettiest girl on the block or the most accomplished, but you'll get somebody who appreciates seeing life with that skewed perspective. And as long as you have a good sense of humor and you put yourself out there and risk, because again,
yes,
you ask a girl out and she turns you down, she laughs in your face, you'll live. It won't kill you.
Exactly. But in the comedy movies, they exaggerate. The guy starts running after her, he chases after her and things like that. So it gets kind of crazy. So, Reggie, what do you think of that advice? Are you going to start getting more crazy in some way, in a positive, funny way?
Perhaps, yeah.
Yeah. So tell Steve, what do you think about his advice here to you?
Well, no, I mean, it makes sense, you know, just putting yourself out there and asking a girl out, what's going to happen? She's, most things you can do is say no. Maybe laugh at your face,
but
just say no.
But Steve, should he use some canned jokes? Should he go to the encyclopedia of jokes and start rapping out jokes? Or what do you think?
No, he should share who he is. He should, and actually, your idea of everybody taking an improv class is an excellent idea. I give that advice to writers to get out of their heads.
Yes.
So you really learn how to improvise conversation. You learn how to improvise reaction. And my experience in taking acting classes is you'll meet pretty girls.
There you go, Reggie. Perfect. See. Are you going to get
You'll learn a skill. You'll meet pretty girls. You go out for a beer afterwards. What's wrong with that? What could be bad?
I think, Reggie, you got to join his class and get started. That sounds great. Now, Steve, the other thing, so we're talking about being authentic to your character. I think you talk about that also in sitcoms and other shows, that the comedics are funny, are really true to their nature. If they're arrogant and pompous, they stay that way. If they're humble, or if they're, I guess, silly.
Well,
is that the case?
They stay that way to a certain point. Because they're not stereotypes, they're not two-dimensional characters, they're archetypes, meaning that that if you're arrogant and pompous, you will continue to be that until some outside circumstance or influence changes you. And that creates character progression, character arc, because that is important to realize that no one stays in one place all the time. So, for instance, one of the things that I talk about in my class is, is a worldview. So let's say you come from a small town and everybody in that small town is nice, and your worldview is that people are nice.
Yeah.
So let's say you go to the big bad city, you go to New York, and you ask a stranger, could you look after my bag? Because your worldview is that everybody's nice. Yeah. So you turn around, you look back, your bag is gone, the stranger's gone.
Yes.
And if your worldview is that everybody's nice, your first reaction shouldn't be, I'm robbed. Maybe your first reaction is, well, maybe he had to go make a phone call. He'll be back. So you wait.
You're talking about Crocodile Dundee. I think you're talking about.
Right. And so you wait. And eventually, if your worldview is, the world's a friendly place, eventually you'll think, I hope he's okay. And maybe hours after that, that character who sees the world as a friendly place would start to think, have I been robbed? So he can change, but the change is slow.
Okay, but Crocodile Dundee, the guy that from Australia, didn't become a cynical person at the end, did he? Did he become bitter, or did he maintain his optimism?
No, he became a little bit more wary. Maybe you can't do that. You can't trust everybody. So you gain perspective. I mean, as a psychiatrist, you know that people don't change immediately, and if they do change, it's slow over a long period of time, if at all.
Yes. Now, Steve, by the way, I'm a psychologist, Steve, just to make that clear. Not a psychiatrist. They prescribe medication. Now, the benefits of humor. Now, we do know research that shows that you can attract more people. There's what's called mood contagion, right? If people laugh and you laugh with them, you feel better. You're seen as a better mate. You have better physical health. Chemicals are releasing your brain. Mental health. And even you live longer. Some of our comedians have lived to be long ages. What else do you see are psychological benefits to humor? I think one of them could be that reduced self-importance. Someone who's very maybe self-important can have more humility. Do you see that as a benefit or other benefits?
I see one of the main benefits is being able to humor is a way of looking at things through a different perspective. And so if you can see things through a different perspective, then you don't get so tied up with that person did me wrong.
Yes.
That person cut me off. This person doesn't like me. If you can see everything through a perspective in which we're a fool on a planet full of fools, and so if occasionally somebody does a foolish thing, maybe I shouldn't take it so personally.
Exactly. Laughing more. Gottman did research on marital relationships, and he videotaped them. He found that those couples that did well often use humor as a diffusive technique. When things were getting heated, one of them said something kind of funny, and it really helped the relationship. It helped them, calm down from the anger.
Exactly.
So you see that as a positive.
I sometimes coach business leaders who are always interested when they give keynote speeches to come off as funny. So they'll try to start off with a joke, and I'll just say, don't start off with a canned joke. Just share something about yourself. Share your own thoughts. Share who you are. Share your own insecurity. Let people see who you are, and that's the best path to open up towards humor.
That's great. Now, Steve, here's an interesting question. Are people born with funny bone? And also, Steve, are you a funny guy yourself? Because you seem very philosophical. Are you funny too?
Well, the first question is people are not born with a funny bone because you've never seen a baby being delivered, being slapped on the butt, turning around and saying, hey, a funny thing happened to me on the way through the fallopian tube. People are not born funny. You don't have to be born funny. Okay. However, I think we all have the ability to be humorous. In my workshops, I occasionally get laughs. It's my I'm a failed actor, so it's my it's my kind of one man show, and I get my performing jollies off of it. But I think there are very few people who have absolutely no sense of humor. You know, if you've ever gone to a Thanksgiving dinner or a Christmas dinner, and you're sitting around and the family's laughing, as long as you're not talking about politics, you know, everybody has the ability to make other people laugh.
That's true. Now, did you hear of the comedians that are great? They said they were bullied as kids. Maybe they were the chubby kid, and they made people laugh at 10 years old. Are those the natural comedians? Are there people like that, that since they're little kids, they're making people laugh, and they become great comics?
Well, there's some truth to that. Ray Romano once said that if he had been hugged, and he was the star of Everybody Loves Raymond, a very popular sitcom.
Yes, of course.
He said if he had ever been hugged once as a child, he'd be an accountant. So there's some truth to that. I think what's true is that the comedian is the outsider.
Yes.
He is the person who has escaped from or is immune to groupthink. He sees the way the world is, not in a slightly different way, but maybe in a way that's accurate and true. And the comedian is the person who has the courage to say it out loud.
Ah.
Now, you might go somewhere and have an opinion, and you keep it to yourself because you don't want to be embarrassing.
Yes.
Or you don't want people
right.
to think badly of you.
Ah.
But the comedian is somebody who, you know, doesn't worry about that as much because they figure they're already not going to,
be
too kind to me. So I might as well say what's on my mind.
That's kind of cool. And that actually ties in with the idea, Steve, of, how do we become funnier? And I'm seeing that there are a lot of applications. For example, in the business world, when I look at potential employees, I like to see if people have a good sense of humor. I think that's an important trait. And executives look for that as well. So becoming funnier is an important thing. And I think you're saying to tell the truth. The truth is funny. But to have the courage to tell the truth.
So right.
I would teach people to have courage because, again, we're all afraid of social disapproval, saying the wrong thing, looking dumb and foolish. You know, shy people especially have that constantly in their mind. I'm going to say stupid things. I'm going to be rejected. So how do we teach them that confidence to say things that way that are very straightforward and truthful, but in a funny way?
There are a couple of rules. For one, if you're going to make fun of anybody, start with making fun of yourself.
Ah, okay.
So rather than saying something that is going to offend other people, not because you say, this pie doesn't taste good,
yes.
but you say that dress is ugly. You're not really saying something funny. You're attacking somebody.
You're insulting. But I mean, with some people, there's insult humor. I mean, I've seen this guy, Jesselneck, and a few other of these insult comics on these shows. How do they get away with it being insulting?
Because they're playing a character who's an insulting character.
Ah.
So you're not laughing at the insult that they're making about the person. You don't even know that person.
Yeah.
You're laughing at this outrageous character
right.
who says whatever they want to say and speaks their mind.
Yeah.
And so you're actually laughing at that outrageous character as opposed to laughing at that poor person who they're making fun of.
I see what you're saying. So then, a joke for yourself. What else is another way to gain confidence in saying the truth in a funny way?
You want to, I go back to taking an improv class, which is a good way. But the other way is simply to start to share your own weird, insecure thoughts.
Ah.
So rather than going into a room and saying, boy, you're fat.
Yes.
You know, which might offend somebody.
Of course.
You go in and you say, I am so hot. I need to put on another shirt. I'm sweating so much. You share your own. Mm-hmm. You just give yourself the permission to speak what you're thinking as long as it reflects on yourself as opposed to reflecting on other
people. But what if you say, I am fat. I eat too much food. Would that be funny if you say it about yourself?
Well, now we're talking about jokes. And a joke is a concept that is incomplete and is only completed in the mind of the hearer.
Yes.
So if I just say, boy, I'm really fat, that's not a joke. It's a fact. But if I say, when I go to the beach, I have to wear a 9-piece bathing suit. You have to take instantaneously.
Yes.
You're taking that concept and you're understanding what I'm inferring.
Right. And you create an image. I can visualize a 9-piece. That'd be pretty big. Yeah?
Right.
A 9-piece bathing suit.
So part of saying something that's funny is you say something and you
exaggerate
infer something that the listener will complete in their mind and create the comic image or the comic thought.
So should we be like keeping a funny file, like everywhere we go, like writing things down, funny things that we see?
I mean, if you want to be a comic writer, that's what writers do. But if you're just going through life and you just want to add more humor to your personality, yes, then I would pay attention to things that you say that make other people laugh. I mean, don't go out of your way to try to say funny things, but if you say something that's funny,
yes,
just try to write it down or remember it or try to say, well, what did I do there that worked? Maybe I can do it again.
Right, because I'm a speaker and a teacher, so I'm thinking of speakers and teachers probably want to write things down, right? So they can, you know, use it again. And how about finding a humor buddy? Is that helpful to be around funny people to make you funnier?
Well, you know, I think if you're interested in developing your sense of humor, then you want to go back and watch the great comedy films, the great comic sitcoms. And if you're interested in doing comedy professionally, then the rule of thumb is if you find yourself in a room and you're the funniest person in the room,
yes,
find yourself another room.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
Because you want to surround yourself with people who are making you laugh. If these people make you laugh, then you're going to, wow, what did they do? You know, then you're going to want to at least be as good as they are.
Right. I honestly, Steve, I don't find a lot of really funny people in my everyday walk of life that are really humorous. Is that something that's rare, that, to be a really funny person, or is it unrare?
No, it's actually very common.
Really?
What Sarah Silverman once said, that everybody can be funny, but professional comedians are funny on demand.
Ah,
and that's the difference.
I see. Yeah. Like, I think we all have one friend that's really funny, I mean, very funny, and then the other people are, you know, just average. What makes the difference between the really funny person that we know and the average funny people?
I think the really funny person is both observing something that might be to them absurd or out of proportion, and they take the time to express it.
Okay. And also they have the guts, right? The confidence to say the unpopular thing, I think is what you're saying.
Right. And they have the confidence that if it doesn't go well, they will shrug it off, because it won't, you know, if I say a joke and it's not good, it's not going to kill me.
I see. Now, you also have something called the lawyer exercise, something about lawyers trying to get them, each other out of the room. How does that work as an exercise?
It's actually, in one of the hidden tools, we talk about the hidden tool of winning, that comedy gives you the permission to win.
Yes.
So what I came up with this exercise in which basically I tell three people that they're all lawyers and that their most important case of their careers began in a courtroom four blocks away 5 minutes ago. And then I ask everybody in the workshop, what should they do? How should they solve the problem?
Yes.
And everybody says, well, they should run out the door. Okay. Then I tell each of the three participants individually, and I say, okay, for some crazy reason, I give them each a crazy reason, you have to be the second person to leave the door, to leave the room.
Ah.
I tell each of them that, and I say, and they don't know what the other person's other goal is. So they each know that they have to run out the door as quickly as possible, but they have to be second. And so when I say start, what happens is, and I always try to make sure that these are three non-performers, that these are not actors,
yes,
not people who are skilled at improvisation. I say start, and they what generally happens is there's a rush to the door, and then there's a stop, and then there's this kind of odd, weird tango right at the door. And sometimes I'll say, I give you the permission to do what you need to do in order to win. And most times there's like a big guy, and I've made sure that one of the people is a tiny person.
Yes.
And most times I'll say, I give you the permission to do what you need to do in order to win. And one of them will pick up the other one, throw him out the door and be the second
one.
Wow. And, pretty cool. And usually every, you know, the audience laughs, you know, there's usually about, you know, 30 to 80 people in the room, and they all laugh. And what I point out is the fact that no one was trying to be funny.
Ah.
No one was trying to do something, quote unquote, funny. Hmm. They were all simply characters in a situation, and I gave them the permission to do what they needed to do in order to win in an unwinnable situation, because three people can't all be the second person out the door.
It's pretty powerful. I mean, the idea that permission to win, because a lot of people don't believe they can win or they don't have confidence. So if they believe that they can win, and then they will do what it takes.
But it kind of creates comic behavior, because if you really did what you
need to do, you're frantic. You do whatever.
With no other consideration, you're going to be doing possibly offensive or unlawful things. But in a scenario, in a film or a TV show, we laugh at that.
Yes.
Whereas in real life, we might take offense. Somebody threw us out a door.
Exactly. But at least psychologically, the permission to win internally is a great idea, that we can give ourselves permission, that we can succeed in life and overcome things. Now, one thing I identify with you, Steve, is I also love to read. When I was a kid, I used to walk about a mile to the library and get a bunch of books and read autobiographies of Edison, Einstein, and O. Henry stories. You told me you have the same passion for reading. And the idea of being a great writer, I think you teach people how to be great comedy writers. I would imagine one of the secrets is to be a great reader as well. Is that generally true? And also, are there other tips that you would give?
Well, I don't think you can be a great writer without being a great reader. I mean, and that's not just me. That's what Stephen King says. When I was a kid, I had the insane compulsion to read every book in the library, starting, you know, from the Dewey, you know, like the card catalog. This is before they even had computers.
Yes.
I don't need to tell you that I was unsuccessful in that endeavor. But I think that a house without books is an empty house. If you're interested in writing comedy, what you want to do is not only read books and read about great comics, you want to watch. There's 150 years of performance comedy on videotape, on film, and you want to watch what you think, what makes you laugh. If you can simply take the time and screen all the movies that make you laugh, all the actors that make you laugh, you're going to give yourself a graduate course in comedy.
That's true. Now, Steve, you know, some people from the older generation are a little bit against the new technology, you know, that people don't read anymore. Other people say, you know, the e-reading and all that is okay as well. How do you stand on that? Do we need to have more books, or do you think we can do e-reading?
I was a latecomer to Kindle. I wanted to only have a real book in my hand. I couldn't imagine not having a book. But you know, because I do so much traveling, you physically can take 75 books with you in your luggage, but you can take 150 books with you.
Yeah, okay. So you do see the advantage of that technology in a sense.
Well, I'm not. I love real books. My compromise is I read the New Yorker magazine, and I refuse to miss a copy. So I'm now about 3.5 years behind. I am now on the March 2016 issue, and I have all the rest of them piled up in my cabinet. And I'll get to them eventually unless I die. Okay. But if I die, then...
That's okay, right? You said if you die, then...
I won't have anything to worry about.
Exactly. So I like your philosophy.
I'm reading the New Yorker. That's the live, the real print that I have in my hand. Otherwise, I have like about, I would say, about 2,000 books in my house, and I have about 200 books in my
kitchen. Instead of dying broke, you can die with books. It's even better, right? Now you leave something behind you. Right?
You gotta have books.
Now, Steve, I'm gonna put you on the spot here, okay? In a second. Okay. What are the three best movie comedies of all time in your mind? I kind of like The Jerk, is one of mine, but tell me three that you love.
Okay, you are putting me on the spot. I'll tell you three that I love. I'm not sure if these are the three best, but I love Groundhog Day because it's a great premise that is developed with heart and soul and humor.
Yes.
You got to give it up for Modern Times, which is Chaplin. And if I had to pick a third one, I'll pick something that's more current. I'll pick Bridesmaids.
Oh, wow. That was a great movie, too.
as a great example of kind of a team comedy, yes. And also refutes the lie that women aren't funny.
Yeah, exactly. How about comedy show, like TV shows? Would you say top three of all time?
Top three.
For you.
I'm going to go with Seinfeld. Because, you know, he was a Jew in New York and I was a Jew in New York, so that appealed to me.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the best made sitcom that still makes me laugh over and over again. Everybody Loves Raymond.
Okay.
And if I'm going to pick something from the modern era, I will go with Veep.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that one. Veep. Okay.
Veep. It's on HBO. It's Armando Iannucci. It's political comedy, but it's also the comedy of bad behavior.
I see what you're saying.
But I have to also give honorable mention to animated comedies such as Family Guy, Simpsons, and my current favorite animated comedy is Bob's Burger, which I cannot get enough.
How about those little kids that talk dirty? What was that one? South Park or something? Did you like that?
I enjoy the satire of South Park, but I don't enjoy it as much as I enjoy the families that are created in Simpsons, Family Guy.
I see.
Because those are dysfunctional, terrible families that remind us all of our own dysfunctional families.
Makes sense. Now, Steve, if you could tweet one thing to the world, what would it be?
If I could tweet one thing to the world?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Vote in 2020.
Oh, come on, Steve. Give me something funny.
Something funny?
Or is that funny by itself?
I'll tell you what I would put on my tombstone.
Okay.
Okay. No spoilers.
No spoilers?
No spoilers. Okay.
What does that mean? I don't get it.
Well, what it means is I'm dying, but don't tell me what's going to happen next.
Oh, I see. That's kind of cool, actually. It's a philosophical, spiritual element, right, or something. And then what excites you the most about your future, Steve? Anything you're working on or, I don't know, even personal career or personal goals?
I'm hoping to survive Kiev. I finished my second book, and I guess I've been toying with the idea of writing a third book. I've written about comedy in general. I've written about structuring a comic screenplay. And I guess the next thing I'm going to talk about is I'm going to try to deconstruct sitcom comedy. But that's just a small glimmer in my mind right now.
Yeah. Well, Steve, it's been a wonderful joy to have you on the show. You know, you brought a lot of great insights about humor and comedy. And actually applying this to the real world and the personal life, you know, the psychological world of people, helping them be better in relationships, maybe more self-confidence, better at work, and just have a better perspective on things. I think it's a really great work you're doing.
Can I give myself a plug for a second?
Yes, definitely.
If you've listened this far and you want to hear more, my website is kaplancomedy.com. That's kaplancomedy.com. And I'm available on Twitter at skcomedy.
Okay. Anything else they can get from you? Have any books or consulting?
On Amazon, you can get my two books, The Hidden Tools of Comedy and also The Comic Hero's Journey. Mm-hmm. And if you Google Kaplan, Steve Kaplan Comedy, you'll come up with literally dozens of videos in which I'm talking about.
What's your next workshop here in L.A., Steve, where we are right now? Do you have one coming up in Los Angeles?
My next workshop in Los Angeles will be in March.
Okay, March of 2020.
March of 2020.
Okay, perfect. Well, Steve, we'd love to have you back on again. Maybe you and I can collaborate on some future activities. We do some live events.
I would love that.
We definitely want to put humor, you know, into it.
And I could use a psychologist. You know, you have no idea how many problems I have.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully, you know, we can help people solve each other's problems, right?
I appreciate that.
And relationships and all that. So again, tell us your website one more time, Steve, so people can get to you.
It's www.kaplancomedy.com.
Perfect. Again, this is Dr. Alex Avila. This has been Love University. And again, remember that humor is something innate in all our lives. It's something that can help us have perspective, can help heal as well, and bring a positive emotion to people around us. And I love the idea of being optimistic, believing that things will be okay in your world, and you have permission to win. And that's a great insight that we have. So again, if you want to reach us and have questions for Steve or the show or Love University, you can reach us at loveuniversity.love, loveuniversitylove@gmail.com, 310-226-8090. Like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And until next time, Dr. Avila, students, put away your notes, pens, notepads, iBooks. And this week, see if you can look out in the world and find some humor, find a different perspective in life, and bring more joy into your life and others. So, Love University students, if you have any questions, you can email us at loveuniversitylove@gmail.com, 310-226-8090. Visit us at loveuniversity.love. Like us on Facebook at Love University Podcast. Also Instagram and Twitter at Love U Podcast. Until next time, Love University students, put away your notepads, your books, your iPads. And this is Dr. Alex Avila.